is coming. Between light and darkness. Will you bow down to the darkness? Or will you fight?
Saturday morning, serials chapters 1 through 15. Fly paper, penny loafers, Lucky Strike green. Flat tops, sock hops, Studebaker, Pepsi please. Do you remember these? Cigar bands on your hand, your daddy's socks roll down. Sticks, no plugs, and aviator caps with flaps that button down. Movie stars on Dixie Cup tops and knickers to your knees. Do you remember these? The Hip Parade, Grape Trouade, the Sadie Hawkins Dance. Pedal pushers, ducktail hair, and peg in your pants. Howdy doody, tutti frutti, the seam up the back of her hose. Do you remember those? James Dean, he was keen, Sunday movies were taboo. The senior prom, Judy's mom, rock and roll was new. Cracker Jack prize, stars in your eyes, ask daddy for the keys. Do you remember these?
The boogeyman, lemonade standing, taking your tonsils out. Bend and burn and wait your turn, and four foul balls you're out. Cigarette loads and secret codes and saving lucky stars. Can you remember back that far?
To boat neck shirts and fender skirts and crinoline petticoats. Mom's a word and a dirty bird and a double root beer float. Moon hug caps and loud heel taps, and he's a real gone cat. Do you remember that?
Dancing clothes, little moron jokes, and cooties in her hair. Captain Midnight, Ovaltine, and the whip at the county fair. Charles Atlas, course, Roy Rogers, horse, and only the shadow knows. Do you remember those?
Gable's charm, frog in your arm, loud mufflers, bitchin' woo. Going steady, Veronica and Betty, white bucks and blue suede shoes. Knock-knock jokes, who's there? Dewey.
Dewey who?
Dewey, remember these? Yes, we do. Why do we remember these?
If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown, I ain't kinda just hang around. But I heard someone call my name one day, and I followed that voice down a lost highway. Everybody told me you can't get far on $37 in a Jeep guitar.
Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio. Liberty Lounge. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern. Right here on Survival Circle.
Wake up in the middle of the night in a truck stop, stumble in a restaurant.
Sun coming up,
Welcome to the Shooting Bench on Survival Circle Radio Network, keeping you informed on guns, news, politics, guns, survival, preparedness, and guns. The tyrant is holding our country hostage, and our freedom is at stake. It's time to take a stand and tell the tyrant, we will not comply. Join me now in the never-ending fight against tyranny, right here on the Shooting Bench.
Wonders might be present.
Okay, now we should have sound, and it's still Monday, the 15th of July, and this is still the Shooting Bench. I still had everything plugged in from Friday night and forgot to change that over. So you ought to be getting some sound here pretty quickly. Let me put that in here. Well, you'll probably be getting it right away. So we'll wait till we see if we're getting any sound, because all the pretty little colored bars are bouncing up and down here, so that's a good sign that things are working. So let's go over here to the chat room and see what's going on. Okay, chat room, let's see a show of hands here. Hello. Well, I'm just going to assume, well, that's a long delay if you guys are going to give me a show of hands here. That's a long delay between the time I talk and the time you're getting it, if you're getting it. So, let's see here. There we go. Doc says 5x5. Okay, thank you, Doc. If Doc's getting it, everybody ought to be getting it. So, welcome, welcome. So, a lot of stuff happened over the weekend. We had I cut myself about 2 songs short Friday night, and I come over here right on time to turn it off, and it was already silent, so I screwed up somewhere and didn't time it just right. Sorry about that. So I didn't have a proper sign-off there Friday night, but I suppose we'll get over it. That's one of those live radio things that just happens. So you noticed Amy wasn't here tonight, so we're discussing the future of that show to see if it's going to continue. Doc is absolutely right that consistency is important on here. It's never going to be 100% consistent. It's live radio, and it is what it is. So, but it can be a lot more consistent than it has been, and I'm certainly going to shoot for that, especially on far as my end goes anyway, and hopefully the other host will do the same. But it's, like I said, it is what it is, so hopefully it'll all work out. All right. I don't even know where to start. We have so many things. You know, let's start with something good here. I don't know if y'all saw this story or not, But Rick Perry, who was the former governor of Texas, I don't believe he is anymore, but he said now that Ross Perot is dead, he can tell this story. And it's not a bad story. It's actually a very good story. And I had no idea that Ross Perot was this way. But Ross Perot was a very, in spite of all of his successes and everything, he was a very avid supporter of wounded veterans and put a lot of time and money into helping them out. And I just, right now, just learned to hate Dallas News, so that won't be happening again. So I'm going to have to try to remember this from, I'm trying to dig into my deep down in my memory and see if I can remember this. But anyway, he helped a lot of vets. He did it privately. He didn't care about anybody knowing, and up until now, nobody did, you know, pretty much except for the people that he helped and probably a few people here and there, but it was never in the news. And Rick Perry said he was a good friend of Ross Perot and had seen him help vets numerous times. One in particular, I guess, came to mind. He was, I don't remember what his ailment, his injuries were, but it required a wheelchair and required extra surgeries. It required airplane flights to here and there to get worked on and all this stuff, and it was a substantial amount of money. And Ross Perot footed the whole bill for all of it and gave his mother his personal phone number and said, if you ever need anything, give me a holler. But it wasn't just one instance. It was lots of different people. So that was a pretty neat story there about Ross Perot. I had no idea. I was never it wasn't that I wasn't a fan of Ross Perot. I just never paid any attention to him, you know. So, I have a series of things here, and I want to bring all these up and get them in order so that we can talk about them a little bit. So stand by with me here just a second. Let me bring all these up. I have several of them. And I did very, very little research to get this, several of them. But there are actually dozens of them that are very similar. There's one in particular. What I'm talking about here is assault rifles, semi-automatic, you know, assault-style, military-style rifles, the AR-15s, AK-47s, and whatnot. And the number of times that homeowners have used these for personal defense of their homes, their lives, their loved ones, whatever. And aside from these stories right here, there was one that I read on the air several years ago. As a matter of fact, it was one of the first ones that I remember where there were multiple. I almost said victims. They weren't victims. They were multiple casualties, multiple bad guys put down with an AR-15 or with an assault rifle. I use that term assault rifle because everybody used the term assault rifle. I know the difference. It wasn't a Remington 760. I think it's important to know in this instance exactly what type of rifles these were. People get all butthurt and raise hell over the using that term. They say assault is a verb. Well, so is golf if you use it that way. They have golf clubs and baseball bats and everything else. So if you used this in defensive mode or offensive mode, you just assaulted a bunch of people with that weapon. You know what that makes that? That is an assault weapon. So, yes, I am very well aware of the proper definition and all that, but that's what we're going to use for tonight anyway. To take care, I remember that when Ross Perot went to Iran. I was duly impressed when he went to Iran and rescued some of his people out of there. That was quite a deal. I remember that very well.
But one of the ones that I remember here was that I didn't find the story for, but it was a some people broke into a gun shop, and it just so happened that the owner of the gun shop lived in the gun shop. He lived in the other end of it, had a little apartment type deal on the other end of the gun shop. And these guys came in and were in the process of stealing a bunch of stuff. And he jumped out there with his Bushmaster, as I remember, and brought that to a screeching halt at the expense of, I don't remember, two or three different, two or three bad guys there. Yeah, that's right, Doc. Saul Ruff, or whatever they want to call him. Well, they can be because they have hand guards, or because they have forward pistol grips, or because they're black, or because they're more than 10-round capacity magazines, or because they're whatever. They could be a single shot with a 1-round magazine, with a no-round magazine. You put the magazine in to make the gun work, but you have to load it through the ejection port one at a time. They would still call it an assault rifle. So, you know, there's no way to get away from that. It is what it is, and I'll call it, you know, whatever. You know, when I tell the guys, let's go out and practice, you know, bring your rifles. What do I tell them that I don't get ridiculed from all of them? I say, bring your assault rifle. It's not an assault rifle. Assault rifle, I know, shut up. Just bring the damn gun, would you? I don't want you to bring your bolt-action guns. I don't want you to bring your 22s. I don't want you to bring handguns. I want you to bring the semi-automatic guns that are black and scary and that they call assault weapons on the news. So I'm just going to shorten it up and say bring assault weapons. So anyway, nothing we can do about that, I guess. The damn news media is so retarded. Anyway, let's look at a few of these. What I'm trying to do, and I'm preaching to the choir, I know, because you guys already know all this, but maybe you can use some of this information to share with some of your friends or acquaintances that need a little persuasion, a little encouragement, a few facts to show that assault weapons, assault rifles are semi-automatic rifles are a necessary thing, and that they're a good thing. Yakima Glock, I know that. Under the new law in Washington, I think it was 1639, right? If it's a rifle and a semi-automatic, it's an assault rifle. And that includes 22s. It includes every damn little old thing, regardless of the configuration. And Yakima Glock, if we go there, I didn't want to go there because I knew that was going to start another discussion, but they're not battle rifles. The M1 Garand was a battle rifle. The M14 was a battle rifle. The 1903 was a battle rifle. The 3040 Craig was a battle rifle. All of those were battle rifles. What we're talking about are semi-automatic carbines, which are, if you want to get really testicle here, they're carbines, and they're not rifles, and they're not battle rifles. So that's a whole nother argument you can get into right there. So, yeah, this 1639 covers everything. I think, didn't it exempt 22s with tubular magazines? If it did, it's not a good thing, but it's one little shining star in this sea of filth there. I remember when I had my Nylon 66, which, by the way, I would love to have another good, relatively new Nylon 66. I love those little guns. And, man, I cannot even, in my wildest dreams, I couldn't remotely come close to within 10,000 rounds of how many rounds I put through a Nylon 66. Had a couple of them over the years, and boy, I mean to tell you, I did my damn best to wear them out. and it just wasn't happening. They shot for a while. And but we made speed loaders for them guns. We didn't have, you know, at the time, I didn't have a rimfire gun with a detachable magazine or anything. So everything I had was a tubular magazine. And on the Nylon 66, because you had a little funnel-like thing in the butt end of it, you pulled the tube out of there, and you had a little dished-in area where you could okay, Yakima Glock, I got you. I didn't know for sure. You're probably right. You live there. But anyway, what I did was took some, we'd go downtown and get some 12-inch nipples, some 3/8 inch nipples with screw-on caps. And we, on the one end, we'd leave it galvanized and tighten it down with the wrench. On the other end, we painted that cap red, and we could fill that up. And as I recall, I think we could put 14 rounds in there. I don't remember for sure. I think it was plumb full there. I don't believe those rounds are quite an inch long, and I think we could put 14 in there. But we got to where we could fill that gun up, or maybe it was one short or whatever. But, you know, we'd shoot to our heart's content and pull that thing out of there, holding the stock with our left hand, and put that follower that you pull out of there, the tube, between your forefinger and middle finger with the same hand you're holding the gun with, and whip out your speed loader and take the cap off and just dump them in there, put the tube back in, and go back to shoot. So it was pretty quick, pretty fun for a bunch of kids who didn't know any better. I don't know how I got off on the 9-on-66, but if you look around a little bit, there was a guy, what was his name? I believe his last name was Fry. Doc probably knows. Mountain Shooter might know. I don't know. Maybe all of you know. But was it Robert Fry or something like that? That when they did the, when they were promoting this nylon, these nylon 66s, he took two of those and had somebody loading for him. And he shot, if I recall, something like, I think it was either 10,006 out of 10,010 or 100,006 out of 100,010. I don't remember which. But the old ads back in the late 60s, early 70s showed him sitting on top of a pile of these 2x2 wooden blocks with bullet holes in them. And if I remember right, he missed four out of either 10,000 or 100,000. I don't remember which. No malfunctions, and that was quite a seller for the Nylon 66. And they had the, for those of you that might remember this, they had the Apache, what did they call it? The something Apache? Anyway, it was the black diamond or the white diamond version. I don't remember exactly, but it had a detachable magazine. That was the only difference between it. And all Nylon 66s were brown. The Apaches with the white, black diamond, whatever it was, were black. So, anyway, a little bit of nostalgia for you there. So, let's see. Now, so I've got these stories lined up. We had the one in the gun shop. And there was the one, let's see, let's go through these, and there's one more I remember, and I'm not sure if I got it here or not. But this one's the most recent. This just came out a few days ago. In Summerfield, this is in Florida. There was a guy here that, and he was injured. They got an honest-to-goodness dyed-in-the-wool carved in stone for real gun battle, and two home intruders came in his house, and he lit them up with an AR-15. He did get shot. He's going to be okay. And he killed two of the four that come into his house. The other two, I think, were captured shortly thereafter. So, two of them were detained at the scene, and the other two were killed. Homeowner was in stable condition as of Thursday afternoon. So, hooray for our side, as far as I'm concerned. Here's another one. This is from January of this year. And we talked about this when it happened. Homeowner used AK-47 to shoot five intruders, killed three of them. That's what I'm talking about. 20-year-old homeowner reportedly shot five home intruders with an AK-47 in East Houston, Texas, on Saturday, killing three of them. The, you know what, I got to get some air moving in here, so I think I'm going to take a little short break here. And let's put you on something good to listen to here. And I'll be back here in just a minute. It is getting pretty warm here where I'm sitting. If I can get all this stuff, I wasn't prepared to do this, so we'll just have to live with it. Like I said, that's the downside of live radio, you know what? When we get to making $9 million a year like Rush Limbaugh, we'll change all that. But for right now, this is what it is.
I'll be back.
Before you take another step, there's something you should know about the years ahead and how they'll be. You'll be living in a world where roses hardly ever grow. 'Cause all I have to offer you is me.
Doc's Freedom Files.
Freedom. Keep walking, keep on your toes, and don't stop talking about freedom.
The law, in its majestic equality, forbids the rich and the poor alike to sleep under bridges, to beg in the streets, and to steal bread. Anatole France wrote those words across a century and an ocean, yet they seem to perfectly describe the current state of America. The BBC recently aired a program, What It Means to Be Poor in America, which generated a lot of internet buzz. The program illustrated what most of us have seen in recent years: tent cities, people living in the storm drains of Las Vegas, and increasing hunger amongst larger numbers of our fellow citizens. Yet no one on the program, including the token conservative spokesman, seemed to understand that one of our largest poverty problems is limited freedom and unlimited government. Yes, there is poverty, and always has been, but it is government that needlessly and expensively compounds those problems. At every step of the way, there is some government agency impeding the lives of the poor. Yes, I know, there are countless .gov aid programs out there, but between admin, staffing, private contracts, and regulatory requirements, these always seem to benefit the tax feeders disproportionately more than the poor. Do you want, or need, to live in a car, teepee, tent, or simple shelter? Try doing that legally in virtually any place in America, even if you own the land. You can't. You don't have the freedom to do it. While you may get away with it for a while and fly under the radar, you will at any time be subject to police raids, code enforcement actions, and of course the ever-present CPS, ready to take your kids. A traditional American method for widows to support themselves was to operate a boarding house. She had the freedom to let a few bedrooms in her house and prepare one or more basic meals daily. Try getting away with that legally in today's America. By the time the poor gal complied with the code and fire requirements, permitting tax and health department regulations, she'd be worse off than had she never opened her doors. Needless to say, potential boarders, to include the poor and homeless families, are denied the contractual freedom to choose this form of relatively safe and inexpensive accommodation. The pension is a traditional low-cost housing option in many parts of the world, including Europe. I've lived in a couple of them for extended periods. They were clean, cozy, efficient, and inexpensive. But, and there's always a but, they would never fly in most parts of America. They had smallish individual rooms and communal bathrooms on each floor for residents to share. The places were spotlessly clean, but would never meet many U.S. code requirements. I could go on at very great length, but the bottom line is that government, which with its left hand pretends to champion the plight of the poor, uses its right hand to make conditions of poverty immeasurably worse than they need to be. And this is done, to a greater degree than most suspect at first glance, by limiting freedom. So, to the police officers, code inspectors, bureaucrats, and everyday Americans who may deal with the poor and homeless, I'll share the words of the Dalai Lama. If you can't help them, please don't hurt them. And close with the words of Jesus. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them. This is Doc Toops wishing you life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
That ain't country. That ain't country.
All right, let's hit a couple more of these stories here. Just to, like I said, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but there's, you guys may not be aware of how many of them there are out there. And because I don't have tons of them, but... let's see, there was one here. I'm going to have to use this one. It's NBC News. I hate these damn pop-up things. Anyway, homeowner, this was in Oklahoma, used an AR-15, killed three teenagers, home intruders. Now, each one of these stories, I've read every one of them, and there's only a couple more of it. I read them all of the shooters, all the homeowners were... what's the word? Exonerated? Or, you know, none of them were found guilty. They were all good, righteous shoots. I know that's sounds like a kind of a cold thing to say when you got three dead teenagers in your living room or on your lawn. But you know, it is what it is. So, that was one more. Here is, whoops, that's the same one. So we'll get rid of that one. And here is, another AK-47. Homeowner shoots and kills two burglars with AK-47. And that was, the other one shot five, killing three. This one killed two. This was in Memphis. Two men shot and killed while trying to burglarize a home in the Colonial Acres neighborhood. Happened Friday. Both men were pronounced dead at the scene. The homeowner asked not to be identified for his safety, said when he arrived home, the men were already inside. I see my house being ransacked, and the dog was still going hysterical in the cage. When he saw me, he notified the other individual that was with him. Let's see. I see my dog being... Okay, he said, hey, they're here. That's the moment, he said, when the suspected burglars pulled out guns, but he was able to get to the hall closet to get his. I had my personal AK-47. The homeowner admits it's not the first time there's been a shooting at his home. That brings up a good point right there. And I used to talk about this regularly in my concealed carry classes. I said, most of you will never, ever use this even once. It's one of those things that if you need it, it's going to be a great thing to have, but you most likely never will. Some of you will have the opportunity or the unfortunate opportunity to use it once. We had one guy that had been involved in three shootings and was still taking the class again, and it's one of those rare individuals that wants to continue his training and, you know, get training from different places and try to learn and do things what I consider the proper manner. And here this guy said the second shooting he'd been involved in his home. Police show that our home was shot up less than a year ago. He said, I don't know what's going on, but I know I'm going to defend my life to the best of my ability. So, I talked to a guy this weekend, or yesterday, that, you know, we were talking about kind of a new guy to our area, and we kind of hit it off, and we're talking about guns and stuff, and it turns out he was, you know, a special forces, a SWAT team leader, and just all kinds of stuff for years. He actually developed a, I can't tell you what town it was in because you could look it up and find out who it is, but he developed and taught and certified the first active shooter, I guess you'd call it anti-active shooter, law enforcement class in a town in the Pacific Northwest, and they have since moved out of there and are locals here now. So glad to have him here. He's got a lot of information we can talk about. But anyway, he was talking about going out and shooting with some guys, and they all had their AR-15s and everything, and he had an AK. And when they got all done, yes, sure enough, he did incapacitate or kill all of his targets, but the guys that were shooting with him said, well, no offense, but you're not as good as we thought you'd be. And so what these are gamers. You know, they were cops, but they were gamers. You know, it's important that you shoot these nice tidy little groups in the kill zone. With the 30 caliber and AK-47, it's only important that you get a bullet in the kill zone somewhere. If it's a foot apart, you know, 8, 10 inches apart, whatever, it doesn't matter, guys. Matter of fact, it's better that way. You put three bullets, one on top of the other, within a couple of inches of each other, the second and third bullet don't do near as much damage. The first one's already been through there, and the ones following it are not going to do quite as much, where if you put them 6 or 8 or 10 inches apart, you have three separate wounds that may or may not have connected in the middle somewhere from where the permanent wound cavity, you know, or where the temporary wound cavity spread out there for a little bit. So he said, you guys haven't ever been in combat. He said, I was faster than all of you, but not as accurate. But all of my shots are in the where they're supposed to be. They're just not piled up one on top of the other. So, you know, there's a just looking at the chat room here. There are way too many people out there. Way too many. I mean, I'm talking like lots. Oodles and gobs. A substantial quantity of people that will sit around and talk crap and brag about how their gun is so accurate and they can do this, that, and the other. And then you actually get them out to the range, and sometimes that's not the case. And I'm telling you right now, we are sometime in the not so distant future, and most everybody agrees that this is going to happen, going to happen soon. We are probably going to be called upon to use these weapons to protect our homes, protect our families, protect our communities, protect our state, protect our way of life, our flag, our country, all of the above. So going and spending a bunch of money so that you have the coolest looking thing on Facebook and not know how to use it, guys, that is not what we're hoping that you will do. A lot of these people say, well, you know, there's Antifa doesn't have a chance. You know what? I've seen some of these training videos of Antifa getting out there. Are they doing everything right? Are they cool and fast? And no, they're not. But they're training. They're working together. They're learning together. And I would say that you would probably do well not to underestimate some of these are being trained by special forces or former soldiers or Marines or whatever. Hopefully there's not a lot of them out there, but there are some. And they're never going to be as good as some of us are out there. But they're going to be better than a whole lot of other ones because they're working together. And you need to think about those things when you are doing your shooting and training and whatnot. And are you trying to do the best that you can? Oh, how would I put this? Are you trying to do the best you can for a Facebook post and picture? Or are you trying to stay alive? What's your main goal? Now, I know people say they're trying to stay alive, but they still haven't quite got it figured out yet.
He walked into the bar and parked his lanky frame up on a tall bar stool. And with a long, soft southern drawl said, I'll just have a glass of anything that's cool. A barroom girl with hardened, knowing eyes slowly looked him up and down. And she thought, I wonder how on earth that country bumpkin found his way to town. She said, hello, country bumpkin, how's the frost out on the pumpkin?
seen some sights, but man, you're something. Where'd you come from, country bumpkin? It was just a short year later, in a bed of joy-filled tears, yet death-like pain. Into this wondrous world of many wonders, one more wonder came. That same woman's face was wrapped up in a raptured look of love and tenderness, as she marveled at the soft and warm and cuddly boy child feeding at her breast. And she said, "Hello, country bumpkin, fresh as frost out on the pumpkin. I've seen some sights, but babe, you're something. Mama loves her country bumpkin. 40 years of hard work later, in a simple, quiet, and peaceful country place, the heavy hand of time had not erased the raptured wonder from the woman's face. She was lying on her deathbed, knowing fully well her race was nearly run. But she softly smiled and looked into the sad eyes of her husband and her son. And she said, "So long, country bumpkin, the frost is gone now from the pumpkin. I've seen some sights and life's been something. See you later, country bumpkin." And she said, "So long, country bumpkin, the frost is gone now from the pumpkin. Seen some sights and life's been something."
Thought it sounded like a good idea to throw a little Cal Smith in there while we're talking about all this. But I don't know how to. It's kind of hard to stress this to people if you can't physically be there and kind of critique them and see how they're doing. But I would encourage you to find, see, this is one thing we talk about often. We've talked about it in church yesterday, about a different subject, but the idea is the same. And we've talked about it concerning weapons training many times. We've talked about it on this show many times. And too many people out there don't know what they don't know, meaning that they feel like they're doing okay and they feel like they know what they need to know, but they don't realize that there's just so much more to it. Once they realize that, once they realize that they don't know what they don't know, then they're ready to learn. Then they can learn. They will learn. I had several guys, most of them were older, in our concealed carry class. You know, in New Mexico, we had to do the 15-hour concealed carry class. And I can't even begin to tell you how many guys always sat back in the back. Not all of them were older. Some of them were in their 30s or so. But generally, it was people that were, 50, 60, 70 years old. And usually men. And they sat back there and they kind of looked around. They're there because they have to be there. They're there because the state said they have to be there. You want to carry a gun, you have to go take this class, which I disagree with, but nevertheless, that's what we were doing. And they sat back there and they kind of looked around at some of the stuff on the walls, and they tapped their pencil, and they're just sitting there waiting for the time to go by. And then when we get to the part of the class where it says, where we talk about actually taking a life, using lethal force and the things that are involved in that, and then the things that you may see and hear and what may happen. everybody wants to carry a concealed weapon, but they haven't really taken into account really what it's going to be like when you pull that trigger on somebody and they hit the ground. They all want to carry a gun and they all say, yeah, somebody in here, I'll smoke him, you know, but they're saying that because that's what they hear in the movies. That's what they hear in the beer joints and whatever. They don't really know. They haven't really sat down and put two and two together and say, man, I never thought about that. What if I ever have to really do that? And when we get to that part of the class, most of these people, virtually all of them, the pencil starts tapping. They sit up straight in their chair. They start listening a little bit and actually start taking a few notes. At that point, they realize that they don't know what they don't know. And quite a number of them at the end of the class would walk up to me at the end and say, you know what? I'm 60 whatever years old or whatever the case was. And I had no idea there was this much to this. So now they're hooked. Now they realize that they don't know what they don't know. So if you are one of those, I would encourage you to try to open your mind up a little bit and see, you know, go out and take a class or go out and, you know, get somebody that knows what they're doing to help you along a little bit and just check it out and see how you're doing. Maybe you've got it all figured out, but not everybody does. Okay, I saw Mountain Shooter. You said you were doing something with some programming some radios. It's kind of a daunting task to begin with. When you hook that up, I assume that you're, I don't know why I assume this because you didn't say anything about it, but hopefully you're using a program called Chirp to help program those radios. Once you learn how to use it, it's fast and easy and you can go different models and brands and makes and styles, pretty quickly. You can cut and paste, a portion of a program. Like for my guys, I don't put those same frequencies that in other people's radios. So I can cut and paste a portion of that out of there and put it in a different screen and, do it that way. So hopefully everything is working out and going smoothly for you. The Rhodesians used to call the terrorists floppies because that's the sound they made when they took ground and fell down. Yeah, I bet it was. So, anyway, Mountain Shooter, I don't know if you have any other comments about your programming experience there. But hopefully everybody, most of you, a lot of you are already getting into this this radio deal, and I'm glad to see that because I think it's important. Like I told you a couple of times, I myself wasn't going to worry about getting a ham license or anything. I said, well, when the poop hits the fan, you know, I'll worry about it then. Until somebody said to me, well, is that what you would tell somebody that was just getting a handgun? And that's when it hit me. I said, you know what, you're right. When the poop hits the fan, I'm not going to have time to be learning how to do this. I need to get it figured out now, and then we'll be able to use our time doing other things that are more important when the time comes. So that's what got me started, and I'm glad I did. I've had a ball with it. I've helped a hell of a bunch of people to get into this and start learning how to operate their radios and stuff. We set up our little emergency communications network here in our area, and every Sunday night we have a roll call and a equipment check, and it's been a lot of fun. A lot of people have gotten involved with it, and we have every intention of keeping going on this until the bloom goes up, till things get hairy. Okay, let's see, what is this? Oh, one last thing here before we go. You guys heard about the apparently the Antifa guy shot and killed throwing incendiary devices at a Washington ICE detention center. It didn't work out well for him. It was a stupid idea. But maybe he was willing to accept that risk to make his statement. His statement may not be the same as ours, but he's making one. And I think we're going to see more as things get more volatile and people get more ticked off here. We're probably going to see a few more things like this happen. Matter of fact, Wednesday, we're going to do a story here that I haven't done for at least 2, maybe 3 years. It's not real long. Doesn't take the whole show. Matter of fact, I may even pre-record it between now and then. But it's been a long time since we've done it. And so I would encourage you, if you're able and you're not busy, to join us this coming Wednesday. And we're going to relay a story here that I think is very timely. It was done a few years ago, but I think it applies. It applied then. I think it applies more now. And you'll know what I'm talking about when we get started with it on Wednesday. It'll be in the first half of the show, so don't miss that. Okay, well, I think I'm going to dash on out of here, and we'll see you guys Wednesday for that story and whatever else we got between now and then. Thanks for joining me.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.